Welcome, everybody. Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560, the Thursday edition. Dr. Kelly Victory joining us now. I have Steve House with us as well. Dr. Kelly, we'll start with you. Welcome. And how is your month going so far after only a couple of days in May? But it is May, finally.
Well, thank you for having me, as always. Happy May to you as well. Things are going splendidly. Starting to get some better weather, and I'm getting my greenhouse fired up and getting ready for a nice summer.
Very nice. Steve, welcome as well. For those of you listening for the first time, Dr. Kelly Victory, there's an entire page dedicated on our website to her at rushtoreason.com. Steve, you and I really don't have much of a page other than all the things we do and the things that get inserted from time to time, because we're not near as smart as Dr. Kelly.
Probably not as smart, not as bold, not as daring, not as wanted by the law at times, you know.
Fact. Well, and I appreciate both of you greatly and all of the listeners that are out there. You guys know, and we've done this now for quite some time, several years now. I really felt like by now we'd be doing something completely different. But Dr. Kelly and Steve, we're still on track, still doing what we've been doing, keeping people notified of what's happening out there when it comes to everything COVID, the vaccines, the things that are happening with all of that, the other things that may be coming down the pike, which we'll get into today as well. Before I get started, though, Dr. Kelly, it was interesting. I had a email that came into my inbox earlier in the week that, and I know we've talked about this, and for everybody listening, I'm pretty sure, and Dr. Kelly can verify this, but I don't think there's much that can be done to reverse the effects of what happens when you get the COVID-19 vaccination, especially when you do it multiple times over. But there's some things going around right now, Dr. Kelly, concerning taking a 2-milligram nicotine patch, cutting that into strips of 7, placing that on your torso, yada, 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 going through several different things, switching the patch from side to side, and that will basically get the spike proteins to bind to the nicotine patches themselves. Is there any truth to this, Dr. Kelly?
Well, first of all, I fully understand people's interest in finding some way to rid themselves from the spike protein that they are unfortunately producing in perpetuity,
right,
if they got these jabs. I understand that fear. I understand how you might be thinking, oh, my gosh, what's happening? You know, when is the bad thing going to happen to me? But I think we have to be cautious not to fall prey to every gimmick or everything that shows up on the internet. Now, I certainly have seen this issue, this nicotine patch thing. I have absolutely zero credible evidence, have not seen a lick of scientific support for why that could or should work.
Okay.
So until somebody shows me something, I'm not saying that, you know, maybe there is some plausible explanation for why that would work, but I sure haven't seen it. There are some things that have been shown to be effective, or at least partially, modestly effective, and that includes things like nattokinase, which is an enzyme that's produced from the fermentation of soy. It's been eaten by the people in Asian cultures for many, many millennia. Things like curcumin, which is from the cumin seed, has been shown to break down the spike proteins. And bromelain. Bromelain is a enzyme that comes from the pineapple plant. Again, so those three I just rattled off are enzymes, and it makes sense that an enzyme is what breaks down protein.
Okay.
So the spike is made of a protein. What we need to break down a protein, whether it's by the hamburger you ate or anything else, is an enzyme. So I can see why those things would work. I can't figure out what the plausible explanation would be for nicotine, but, you know, I'll keep an open mind. In the meantime, I just hate to see people jump on the bandwagon with stuff that has no scientific support.
Okay, dumb question on my part, and Steve, I want you to chime in on this once we get past this as well. But Dr. Kelly, dumb question. If, to my thinking, that once you have the shot and you've changed the essential cell structure and is producing these spike proteins, then the enzymes you just mentioned a moment ago wouldn't be a one-time fix. You're going to do that ongoing, right?
Correct.
Okay.
I mean, the issue is we're trying to come up with some way to get rid of the spike proteins that you're making.
Okay.
The problem with these mRNA shots, as you point out, there is fundamentally, John, no off switch.
There's no off switch, right? It just keeps going.
Correct. Okay. We were told that you would eliminate the mRNA from your body within a matter of days. That simply isn't the truth. They knew it wasn't the truth when they said it. Their own studies proved it. What we don't know and won't know until more time passes is, you know, in 2 or 3 years, do you stop producing them then? Is it 5 years? Is it 10 years? Or do you just keep cranking out spike proteins, you know, for the rest of your natural life? We don't know is okay. the real answer.
Steve, I'll let you chime in on this. And there's been a lot of even sort of, I hate to say facts that have come out, because we've been talking about some of these things for years now, but some of the things we've discussed on this program for several years now are finally coming to light, and more of the things even that we just discussed with Dr. Kelly are coming to light.
Yeah, I think the one thing I would ask, if I was kind of a layman who, you know, saw the kinase and all the other solutions that Kelly was talking about, is what am I going to look for on a lab test? Is there something that can measure whether or not this is working for me? And because I'm a lab test kind of guy, right? I mean, if I'm going to take a supplement, I want to see some changes. I'm not saying it's not working. I just wondered, Kelly, is there something you can clue the public into on what would change for them if they were beating the spike protein back?
Absolutely great question, Steve. Right now, there is no commercially available lab test to check your spike protein levels. But we fully expect there to be one. People are working on it. I'm okay. not personally, but there are people okay. who do this for a living who are working on that exact test, because you are precisely correct. We need something that we can monitor, something that's concrete, that's objective, that will show not only is a particular treatment or supplement working to decrease the spike level, but do they drop off naturally over time? You know, these are the sorts of things, by the way, that should have been done before the shots were ever injected into somebody's arm, for the love of God. I mean, these are the things we would want to know before you start giving, so you're doing a mass vaccination program. So I can't say when it will be available, Steve, but I'm certainly hoping that in the next, you know, year, we have a commercially available lab test that would do exactly that.
Here's the sort of
you know, side of me that says, this is what I'm worried about. So you come up with a test that shows the level of spike protein in your blood or in your system, and then all of a sudden you start to see that people who have more spike proteins have cancer now or have some other type of debilitating side effect. And I think for the government, which is trying to protect Pfizer and Moderna here, I'm afraid they're going to just, you know, take that lab test and just throw it away over and over and over again and not let it get through. Because if you could, in fact, prove that more spike proteins in your body led to more severe diseases, then you would have a culprit that you could actually tag for the responsibility.
Oh, 100%. I mean, I think this is, you know, one of the reasons that they were desperate to get rid of the, quote, control group, which is those of us who haven't been vaccinated at all. Because if they can show that it turns out that there aren't any unvaccinated people, for example, who are having sudden cardiac death, or the numbers are drastically less, and there aren't the unvaccinated people aren't the ones developing turbo cancers, and the unvaccinated kids aren't the ones developing autism, and so on and so on. So you're correct. Anything they can do to obfuscate the reality, which is that these mRNA shots absolutely are causing devastating side effects, you know, they will certainly do it. Fortunately, I think there are enough good guys left in the mix who will continue to try to work on a lab test of this sort.
Along those lines, Dr. Kelly, and Steve, chime in after Dr. Kelly, how many folks that were on the other side of the aisle, and what I mean by that is, you know, we're on one side of the aisle. We've been talking about the harm of this and what's been going on and all of COVID, and we missed a huge opportunity in PSAs and trying to keep people healthy to fight off COVID and so on. We instead went towards the jab end of things. We've talked about that now for about 3 years. But Dr. Kelly, that's our side. How many people do you feel that were on the other side, that were pretty much anti you, Steve, and I, have come over to our side and now are starting to push some of the things we've talked about for 3 years? Because there have been some that have you know, quote-unquote, converted over. Is there not?
Oh, 100%. I can't give you hard numbers, but there is no question, John, that there are people who absolutely were hardcore, you know, vaccine zealots who now have seen the light. It includes certainly, you know, my co-host on another show, Dr. Drew,
right.
Drew Pinsky,
right.
Certainly was very, very pro-vaccine, very pro-remdesivir, very pro-Paxlovid, and he is really, over the 2 years, 2.5 years that I've been working with him on this, has changed very much his stance on it. There are other people who are not as high profile as he, who I meet in my everyday life, who say, I got the jab, I got convinced to do it, or shamed to do it, or coerced into doing
right.
it, and it's the worst decision I ever made. I will never let that happen again. They understand now. And they understand in part because either they or people around them are suffering from some really horrific ill events from this. And I hate that that's what, you know, it took for them to finally see the light. But for a lot of people, that's the case.
Steve, your thoughts on that? Because, again, like Dr. Kelly, I agree. I don't know what the actual hard numbers are. I just keep looking at different articles and things that are coming out, and even some of the news media that have really now started asking questions that, frankly, weren't being asked prior that are now on our side of the aisle.
And plenty of the commercials have stopped, if you've noticed as
yep.
well. I haven't seen the commercials like I was. There's no Travis Kelce talking about it now. Obviously, there was also an absence of going after the people who were anti-vaccine from the beginning, right? Nobody's beating up Aaron Rodgers publicly anymore.
Nope.
Nobody's beating up Novak Djokovic, who didn't take it as a tennis player and missed, you know, a chance to win more Grand Slams. I mean, they're just not being talked about. No one's apologizing, but no one's attacking them now either. So I think they're just hoping it goes away, to be honest.
Can't disagree with that.
The other thing that's happening coincident with all of this, Steve, is they're doubling down on their efforts, for example, to expose Anthony Fauci
yeah.
and what's been,
yep.
you know, the actual yeah. origins of this virus. They are exposing more and more of the fraud, corruption, and frankly, you know, the illegal activities of Peter Daszak and Ralph Baric and what went on at EcoHealth Alliance. They are exposing this. And although the vast majority of people aren't paying attention, a few are, and it doesn't take a lot. I just, you know, you're starting to hear even on the mainstream media, even on an MSNBC or CNN, you'll hear a reference to things like, wow, you know, if we find out that this really was the result of gain of function research, what would that mean? You know, what would that mean for the CDC? And so I am hopeful that, you know, we will continue to get those efforts accelerated and to expose really what happened.
All right, folks. Go ahead, Steve. Go ahead.
One quick thing.
Sure.
You just said something that I think about a lot, which is, it's not going to be China that takes the blame for this. They were part of it, but it's going to be the United States of America for funding yep. the research into gain of function. And I think we yep. could be facing a global liability as a country for what happened here. And frankly, as you know, somebody who believes liability is appropriate in some situations, we probably should face global liability. Mm. The question is, what happens then?
Good point. All right.
Yeah, I agree.
Good question. All right. Hold that thought, guys. I've got more to cover on that. If you got a question for Dr. Kelly, by all means, please let us know. Give us a text message or send us a text message, I should say, 307-200-8222. All right. Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560. Dr. Kelly Victory, Steve House with us today. If you're listening for the first time, you can check out all of our previous episodes with Dr. Kelly. Just go to rushtoreason.com. Click on our show notes section, and you'll find all of our previous shows there. Super easy. Okay, World Health Organization has now testified in court. Dr. Kelly, I'll start with you, that vaccine passports were not needed. That advice, by the way, was ignored. Those things fortunately didn't go very far. Unfortunately, they still got started, and I didn't like where they were going at the time and still don't like them.
Well, I'll tell you right now, you know, we have more and more of the, quote, experts coming out now, John, acknowledging that all sorts of their mitigation schemes and their interventions weren't necessary. So far, we've had Anthony Fauci himself acknowledge that masks actually don't work to stop the spread of respiratory viruses, something I said and maintained from the very beginning of this debacle. We now have Anthony Fauci acknowledging that the social distancing was completely made up, not based on a lick of science. They've now acknowledged that natural immunity is, in fact, better than vaccine-induced immunity. They now acknowledge that we never needed vaccine passports, that that was a bad idea, that contact tracing was a complete failure, and on. But these are things that they should have known at the time. They, you know, the idea that, oh, now, fast forward 4 years later, we realize this. No, they had to have known back then. I certainly knew back then.
Yep.
You guys certainly got it back then.
Yep.
What the heck was wrong with them?
Great question. Steve, your comments.
Well, you know, it's always funny how the thing that, you know, you most do not want to be held accountable for works out that you're accountable 4 years after it mattered. You know, we just kind of waited. They just kind of waited until nobody cared anymore. Nobody wanted to hear about it anymore. I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, there's so much more out there than just that. I mean, I sent you the Robert Malone thing. I think that's one of the most eye-opening, impactful things I've heard in years. So I the news every week, it's just crazy. The WHO, I mean, we're about to hand them responsibility for the United States healthcare decisions making in public health. I mean, this is another indication on why you wouldn't want to give it to them.
Fully agree. Speaking of that, I had a question that this fits into, so might as well throw this in. Steve, I'll start with you. Dr. Kelly, I want you to chime in on this as well. We all know who's running on our side of the aisle for president. That would be Donald Trump, of course. Donald Trump was actually in charge of a lot of the early stages of the vaccine. No, he's not completely responsible for this. He had a lot of bad advisors around him. He should have fired Dr. Fauci. Long story short, though, a lot of what happened on his watch. Steve, if you're Donald Trump, how do you head into some of the debates and things that may or may not happen, but some of these questions will still get asked on the campaign trail as he heads into the, you know, November election? How do you answer some of these things when he was, in fact, the guy looking over what you and I and Dr. Kelly are now talking about?
I think the easy answer for him is, look, you know, we were in a desperate situation. You know, we were taking the advice of the experts, right? People have been around for a long time who understood the subject, and we produced a vaccine. But I am not the person, nor would I have ever been the person, to mandate the vaccine, to mandate it for the military, to mandate it in any one of those situations. I'm about freedom. Joe Biden is the guy who mandated the use of the vaccine. So we would have had a different strategy post the vaccine use. And quite frankly, once I saw the vaccine and what it might have been doing to people, I'm quite sure that I would have had conversations with some of the top doctors in the country, and we would have made a decision the vaccine wasn't the right solution. But for the limited time I was there, we were trying to produce something to get us out of the nightmare. We produced it, but then how it was used was Joe Biden's responsibility, and he screwed it up.
Dr. Kelly, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think he's got to go a step further. I think Donald Trump really needs to acknowledge that he was led astray, that he was misguided, that he was surrounded by people who made very bad decisions. And the fact that he has failed to do that, I think, is a problem for him. I wish he would come out and say, look, I thought that the people I'd surrounded myself with, the physicians, the scientists, I thought they were honest people of integrity, and they weren't. And in the next time when I'm reelected, I'm going to surround myself with a much broader range of people to advise me. I am not going to rely on the word of one or two or three people. I am going to really go to the people who were the titans during this past debacle, and I'm going to rely on them. Because
I'm going to rely on the Dr. Kellys of the world, not the rest of these knuckleheads.
The reality is, you know, I got a great idea. Why don't we start listening to the people who got it right?
There you go.
You know,
and you know what? Those are words he could actually use, Dr. Kelly.
Exactly. So I think, Steve, that Donald Trump, you know, because I keep hearing him say things like, I created the beautiful vaccine. And I'm thinking, you know, you're on the wrong side of history on that. I think what he could say is, we tried very hard to get something rushed out to the American public. We thought we were doing the right thing. It turns out it wasn't because I was being misguided. I am not a scientist.
Yep.
I'm not a doctor. I have to rely on the people I surround myself with, and I am going to do a better job the next time around.
Good point.
Well, Kelly, I think that's a great point. I think the other thing I would say if I were him, based on that, I would say, look, the thing we missed in this whole thing was we missed the scientific debate. The doctors that were for scientific debate are the people I want around me, because sometimes you're right, sometimes you're wrong, but you got to be for scientific debate before you're equal to the task of being a leader in the medical field at that level. And the guys that were at the top, like Anthony Fauci and Birx and others, they were not for scientific debate. They wanted to shut it off. When Biden took over, it got even worse because they shut down Twitter and other aspects of free debate and free speech regarding the issue. So it's got to be someone who believes in scientific debate.
I cannot disagree with any of that. By the way, you guys are all spot on. Really quick, I want to insert this because somebody's asking, hey, a lot of the things you guys talk about is different than what we see on CNN, Fox News, and so on. Yeah, for all of you listening, all of the things that we discussed, Dr. Kelly, Steve, and I put those articles and things that we discuss in my show notes. If you go to the website, rushtoreason.com, click on any of these Thursdays now and in the past, you'll find all those different links there for the different things that we discuss, because we, the three of us, discuss different things off air throughout the week. And guys, I take all of those different things that we discuss and I throw them into my show notes. So for those of you listening, that's where you can find those different links about the articles and different things that we discuss. Go ahead, Dr. Kelly. I didn't want to interrupt. I just want to insert that for everybody listening so they know where to go find this stuff.
Yeah, I was just going to say that I think the point about, you know, not having open debate will definitely resonates with Donald Trump. He was, you know, egregiously censored himself. And you guys may recall, I was the first co-plaintiff in the lawsuit that he filed against the, you know, Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter for being shut down.
Right.
So I think it absolutely, Steve, would resonate with Donald Trump, and I think that's a good angle for him to take, that we can never allow ourselves again to have the type of censorship that occurred that disallowed the debate that would have brought us to the truth far more quickly.
Steve, explain. I know we kind of jumped into what Donald Trump needs to be doing campaign-wise when you started talking about Dr. Malone. Explain to everybody what Dr. Malone actually said.
He was discussing the fact that the science and the data of what has made children's health significantly better over time isn't necessarily tied back to the vaccine revolution. He's a vaccinologist, so he's a guy that studies and creates vaccines. And he's saying, look, if you really look at the data, the true revolution in children's health started with better sanitation.
Hmm.
So if it's better sanitation, there's two things to think about. Number one, if that's really what it was, how many vaccines were given to kids? I mean, we went from, as Bobby Kennedy talks about, Kelly talks about, went from like 16 vaccine shots to 72 in a period of time where we then followed and started to see, you know, on the spectrum type problems with especially boys and children. So did we actually ignore the signs that sanitation was one of the big answers? And then were we not careful enough in adopting vaccines because we were giving them credit for something that really wasn't due?
Good question. Great point. Dr. Kelly, go ahead.
Yeah, I think that is irrefutable, Steve, that that's the answer, that that is the truth. You know, we believed for a long time, we were led to believe, we were taught, I can tell you, I was taught in medical school that polio was fundamentally eliminated as a result of the polio vaccine. That is simply not true. That is not the fact. It was already falling. It was burning itself out way before the vaccines were ever even initiated. The reason we've gone from an average of 6 to 8 vaccines between birth and age 18 up to where it is right now, which, as you said, is 72 between birth and 18, 72 injections are on the schedule. That is a direct result of having granted blanket immunity to the pharmaceutical companies in 1986 to make vaccines. So they crank them out as fast as they can. They make $1 billion on them, and they have absolutely no liability for anything, no matter what happens, no matter how devastating it is. So now they are creating vaccines for every single pathogen under the sun. What happened to your good old immune system?
Right.
How about you actually allow your immune system to do what it was made, what it was created to do, and spend more time focusing on overall health and how to improve and enhance your immune function? So as far as they're concerned, they're happy for you to sit inside, get fatter and fatter, eat more and more of their processed food, spend more time on your stupid screens, your iPhone and your iPad, do all of that, and then just take another shot, another pill, another shot. Instead, if we were coaching people to put down the phone, get outside, get some darn exercise, eat real food, get adequate sleep, you know, those sorts of things. Go to church, you know, get together with your friends, do things that are healthful. We wouldn't need a vaccine for every single virus.
Absolutely.
So Kelly, you might as well go down the final piece of this path, which is the polio vaccine was known to contain something, a DNA sequence called SV40, I believe it was, that actually was the cause of a half a million people getting some type of a cancer, and they took it out of the polio vaccine. And then we found out this week it's in Pfizer. It's in the COVID vaccine from Pfizer. What could they have been missing? What could they have been doing that they allowed that to happen, knowing what happened to all those people who took polio vaccine?
Correct. And this is, there are many, many incidences of that, Steve. They know that the lipid nanoparticles that they were using as the base for these vaccines, that's the little sort of fat globule that delivers the mRNA into your cells. We've known for decades that those are very dangerous. They're carcinogenic on their own. That was one of my first clues before the vaccines were ever rolled to the public, that something was very, very wrong. I said, why in the world would they use lipid nanoparticles when there is such known, you know, deleterious impacts from those? And then, yes, now we know that we have, you know, much, much contamination of the shots. We know that the mRNA impedes the ability to repair DNA. We know that you're ignoring cancerous cells. We have actual true carcinogens in the vaccines themselves. I mean, it goes from bad to worse. There's barely a day when I don't read another study and saying, wow, the news just keeps getting better. These are, you know, the gift that keeps on giving.
Fact. Speaking of, when we come back, I want to take a quick break. We come back talking about when women, especially Dr. Kelly, should start getting screened for breast cancer. We're seeing a lot more. We've talked about this in the past, the turbo cancers, and the fact that, you know, right now, I believe the majority of a diagnosis for cancer is now stage four, way up from what it was. About 2/3, I believe, of diagnosis are coming in as stage four. We'll talk about a couple of those things. I want to also get into the bird flu as soon as we come back. So those of you that have a question, please text us, 307-200-8222. All right, Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560. Again, Dr. Kelly Victory, Steve House with us. And I left off Dr. Kelly talking about, you know, the whole screening, you know, where we're at with the cancer end of things. Women, a lot of women, by the way, I think are being, you know, either missed or misdiagnosed, underdiagnosed. I just got a text message in from somebody along those lines. Give us the scoop on that. And used to be that screenings for women used to be a lot later in life. How early should they start doing their screenings now?
Well, there's no question that we are seeing tremendous and very concerning increases in cancers across the board, and particularly in groups of people in whom we don't normally find cancer. Cancer is largely an illness of the very young, with the leukemias and bloodborne cancers, and then cancers of the older groups, people over the age of 55 or 60. What we're seeing now is up to a 10% increase in cancer rates in 18 to 49-year-olds, which is very concerning. And we're seeing cancers, as you pointed out, that are very late stage when they're initially diagnosed. Routinely, women were getting mammograms starting at age 50 and every other year or every third year if they didn't have any risk factors. I would strongly recommend that if you are vaccinated as a woman, that you get at least a screening mammogram done. Okay. Frankly, I don't care how old you are. I think that even people, women in their 20s and 30s, should at least get a screening mammogram done if they're vaccinated because of this increased incidence. If you don't have a family history then of it on top of it, then you can make a decision whether to spread that out and do it every 2 or 3 years. If you have a strong family history, then again, I'd think about doing it on an annual basis.
Okay.
So I have certainly changed my recommendations that way.
Okay. Steve, I know you're on sort of the admin end of this and see a lot of things from that side of the aisle. I guess a question for you. Everything Dr. Kelly just said a moment ago, I'm with her, by the way, and if I were in that world, I'd be doing exactly that. I'm not vaccinated, so I honestly don't have as many worries as I think people that have been. But you and I have talked in the past, even outside of Dr. Kelly, about how this is going to change our entire healthcare system, the amount of people that will need care. I am one, Dr. Kelly and Steve, both, to where I personally don't feel comfortable working inside of the insurance world right now. I read a big article today talking about Cigna, and it's on Apple News, by the way, talking about how they're denying claims, what they're looking for to deny claims, how fast they're denying claims. Steve, I would be looking for alternative ways to have my medical care taken care of outside of, I'm not saying you shouldn't have insurance, but I would be looking at it completely different than I was even 4 years ago.
Yeah, and part of the problem is that I don't disagree at all with Kelly. I think she's right about screening mammography, especially if you've been vaccinated and you should be looking for any unusual symptoms. The problem we have in healthcare right now is access to that.
Right.
There's so many people have quit the profession. So many physicians, so many nurses are burned out. I mean, it's just such a big, you know, long wait time in so many situations. Not every hospital in America has that problem, but a lot of them do. So the issue is, how do you get it? Mm. There are alternative medicines. I mean, Kelly, you know, first and foremost, I mean, you can go to a concierge physician.
Right.
That's a great thing.
That's Dr. Scott. That's one of our sponsors. That's exactly what he's doing. Yep.
Right. You get better access that way. You can text them and you can talk about,
that's right,
you know, symptoms that you have first. But the real issue is going to be, how are you going to get in if you need it? And how closely do you need to watch? And I mean, I think if there becomes a test, like Kelly was talking about earlier, for the spike protein in the system in your body, maybe at some point you'll be able to say it's gone. It's gone from my body and now I can live a normal life. But getting healthy overall,
yep,
is still without a doubt the best idea.
Amen. Dr. Kelly, talk about bird flu. There's supposedly or reportedly a vaccine for bird flu. I mean, I don't trust government. Is this going to be the next thing they try to throw at us? I'm not a conspiracy theorist by any means, but I don't trust them as far as I can throw them.
Well, that's the best thing you can do, is not trust them. And I would run very far away from the new vaccine that they're going to be cranking out for bird flu. The reality is H5N1 is not a new virus. It was discovered in 1996.
Okay.
There have been multiple outbreaks every few years since that time, largely impacting people who are in direct contact with infected birds or infected cattle, so mostly poultry workers. There have been a total of about 850 human cases of bird flu since 1996, incidentally with a relatively high mortality rate, about a 50% mortality rate. But those individuals were largely in areas of the world that had very limited access to health care, mostly third world countries.
Okay.
This new, quote, scare, this new thing they're running up the flagpole, it happened as a result of an individual in Texas working with infected cattle who tested positive for H5N1. His sole symptom was conjunctivitis, pink eye. He was not sick. There's been no evidence of human-to-human transmission. The concerning thing is that given that we know that COVID-19 was a direct result of engineering, it was gain-of-function research, and we know that they are doing gain-of-function research on H5N1. They're doing it right here in the U.S. at the University of Wisconsin, for example. And we know that the cattle that have tested positive down in Texas for H5N1 and cattle in Georgia and Louisiana are all infected with a virus that was created in that lab in Wisconsin, at the University of Wisconsin. These are not naturally occurring viruses. So the concern is, and we are keeping close tabs on it, should it start to act in a way that is atypical, meaning it starts to spread human to human differently, then I will have some concern. At this point, I do not have any concern, and I certainly would not be suggesting that we fall for this new vaccine again, that we have medications that we expect to be able to treat H5N1, including things that worked for COVID, things like ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine and azithromycin and steroids. Tamiflu will undoubtedly have some at least modest application or efficacy against avian flu should it actually start to spread in humans. But we have absolutely no evidence of that right now.
Okay, question just came in. I know you've mentioned this before. Over-the-counter vitamins, do they work? Do they not work? How do you know which ones to use? You know, what do we do in that area?
Well, it's a great question because the market is absolutely flooded with vitamins
yep.
and supplements, and they are not all created equal. Number one, I would steer people away from gummies. Everybody loves them because they're tasty and it's like eating your candy, but you're actually getting your vitamins. Many of those are actually, what they are is candy that is sprayed with a vitamin supplement. It's sprayed on the top as a coating, so you have no idea really how much you're getting. I absolutely would recommend that you get things that are sourced and manufactured here in the United States. Not just manufactured here, but with ingredients that came from the United States. So I would be very cautious about that. Look and find something that says made in the USA with US products. Mm. Because again, those things that are coming from China or India or anywhere else, you cannot necessarily trust them. Okay. I'd make sure that you get something that's certified, meaning that it's actually been verified that the amount or the number of milligrams of whatever it is, whether it's vitamin D or quercetin or anything in between, mushrooms, reishi mushrooms, all things that I recommend, by the way, and that I take myself, but I'm very cautious about where I get them. So just do a little reading, make sure you know where it's coming from. And as I said, as tasty as the gummy, if you want to eat gummies, buy a bag of gummies at the drug for candy and get your vitamins and supplements in a capsule form.
Somebody asked, too, concierge services, are they like $1,000 to $2,000 a month? No, folks, they're around $2,000 or so, $2,500 or so, depending upon the doctor, annually, not monthly. So again, very affordable. And a lot of you that have really, really quick tip, by the way, if you've got an HSA program where you've got sort of a, you know, catastrophic health insurance plan, but you can use your HSA to handle your concierge, there's multiple ways to handle that. Steve, you've talked about some of that in the past. So yes, concierge doctors with an HSA plan actually, Steve, work extremely well.
It does. And, you know, it depends on what your lifestyle is like.
Agree.
I mean, you know, clearly you're right about it. I mean, you know, it's somewhere between $150 and $180 a month or $2,000 a year for it. But I've talked to people who are, you know, busy executives. They're on the road. They're traveling. You know, they get sick. They need a medication. Their doctor knows them very, very well because a concierge doc will only have 300 or 400 patients rather than having 3,000 patients.
Right.
And they will order them an antibiotic because they know the patient so well. They trust their judgment. They ask good questions. And they get you taken care of in situations where you would go to an urgent care in a foreign city not knowing anyone and no one would know who you were. It just makes so much sense if that's your situation. But not everybody can afford it. Not does everybody use it.
No, and I get it. I get the affordability side of it. That's where, again, if you've got the opportunity through your employer to do some sort of an HSA plan, which then, Steve, the affordability is a whole different deal because you're most likely getting insurance somewhere anyways. The cost, and I know because I have one of these, your cost typically on HSA is less, and as you get older, you're able to stack those funds up and even use some of that towards medical care during retirement. Bottom line, and I'm not an expert in this by any means, but bottom line, you guys out there listening should research that because there's a huge advantage in going that way. And Dr. Kelly, you've talked about this as well. And I'm not trying to sell HSA to anybody. It's not what I do. I just know there's ways to make this work financially.
Absolutely. And there is a growing effort, a growing movement amongst physicians to go this independent route where it's cash, but they don't even take insurance. But it's very affordable and you have actually access. It fixes that access problem.
Yep.
As Steve said, because these doctors take a very small number of people. You can actually call the doctor on a Saturday afternoon or
That's
a Sunday
right.
morning and actually speak to him or her and get what you need. I don't think anyone should put themselves in a position where you are beholden again to the system.
Yep.
What we saw happen during COVID, where not only could you not get into the hospital or to a doctor, but they were limiting
yep.
what medications you could
That's
fill.
Right.
That should never happen again.
Fully agree.
You know, and so I think that you need to be proactive and you need to think ahead because, unfortunately, I don't trust them either, and they will limit our access to medications in order to push their newfangled, you know, therapeutic or whoever, whatever's making the pharmaceutical companies a bunch of money.
Amen. All right, guys, with that, always a quick hour. Thank you. Thank you so much, Dr. Kelly Victory, Steve Howe. Steve, I'll let you go first. Thank you very much.
Always good to be with you guys. Thank you.
Appreciate you, man, very much. Dr. Kelly as well. Thank you. Thank you. The past several years, I have learned so much. We and I owe you a ton. Thank you. Thank you.
Well, thank you for having me. It's always great to be with you guys.
Appreciate it, Dr. Kelly. Have a great rest of your day.